This is a Pinball News production.
It feels great to be here. I love being in Holland and Europe in general too. I just, it's a totally different world, and people here know more than we do. They have longer history and they study it, and I don't know. There's things that we just don't have with only 200 years of history. I want to talk about a lot of things. I think maybe the first thing I'll talk about is I love to talk to people around the world. I think that pinball people are some of the best people I've ever met, and only know a couple of bad ones. They're all good. And I just wanted to say that I appreciate that you like my games and that you play them, buy them. I appreciate it very much, and my job is to make you happy. That's what I try to do. I make myself happy too, but I'm going to go get my sunglasses. Okay, maybe not. Okay, Stern Pinball is growing very fast, and we're moving to a new factory in February, and it's fabulous. It's huge. It's three times the size of it. It's more than 120,000 square feet, and nice offices, and not these bad toilets and stuff that it's nasty. I think they've been in the building for like 30 years. I'll be glad to leave a lot of the things that are at Stern, maybe make our lives a little better at that end. We'll also be making, we'll have several production lines, and it's going to be nicer all the way around, and better. I think we'll have better productivity also. So the building is about 11 miles north of Melrose Park, and I'm excited because I got a big office. Bigger! Actually, I don't care about the size of my office. I like a window, and I haven't had a window in my office since, like, maybe like Star Trek The Next Generation, whatever year that was. I think I'm going to show you some slides, if you don't mind. This is my friend John Borg and the guy with his back to us. That's a terrible photograph. I don't even know why I show it. This is Jody Dankberg in the foreground. Can we have the next one? Another picture of John Borg. We're building AC/DC there. How about the next shot? I don't like to stay too long on any one. I don't even know who that guy is, but these two are testers. Okay. The two people back there are testers, and probably getting new software for the game. Could we do the next one? Yeah, this guy's a great tester. And I have to say this, okay? The people that work in the factory are incredible. I'll tell you a story. At Williams, there was a guy who, he worked for the union. If you work for the union, you can do whatever you want, you know? If you don't work hard, they can't get rid of you because you belong to the union. So this guy not only didn't work hard, everybody's game that was broken, we'd get these cards, they'd send it back to us, and they'd say this game is broken, and they're all signed by the same quality control checker. So this guy, I began to dislike him. At Williams, my responsibility was to read every single card and talk to those people on the phone or write them an email or something. So I always had to respond, and I was like, why can't we get rid of this guy? Why does he keep doing this? So I went down and talked to his boss, and he says, we can't fire him. So, but we can just make him sit down. So he sits down on the line all day. The games go by, he'll get up for a minute and then sit back down and do nothing. Finally, he was so bored, he quit. It was a good thing. Anyway, can we have the next slide, sir? These two guys are clowns too. But what I like about them is they really are invested in making a good game, a good quality game. Some problems happen. I mean, things can happen in transit, and we miss some things sometimes. But they do a great job. I'm amazed. There's nobody in the factory that I don't respect. And that's a nice thing. Next one, please. Now, this man is this tall. And his job is to pick up the heavy transformer and put it in the bottom of the cabinet. Also, there's a guy, an engineer at Stern, okay? When he speaks, I can't even hear his voice. It's like, of course, we have to work together all day. I can't hear, he can't talk. It's not good. But we work it out. another checker. You know what? I don't know his name. I'm kind of sad. Next, please. Another one. I don't know his name either. I should know it. And again, okay, the guy on the left is Roberto, and he's like, what is he? He's like a master. Anything you want to do on a pinball machine, or if you want to make a tool, meaning some fixture, like, say, for the lower play field, he builds it out of metal and pins, and he's excellent at that, but he can do just about anything that you need him to do to make a pinball machine. The other guy is, he's like final test and cleaning, and he gets every speck of sawdust out of the cabinet and polishes everything, puts in the padding, and right behind that is the box, you know, the area where they box up the game. I can't do this. This works. This does not work. That works. Can we have another one? Okay, so this is, the guy on the right is Lewis. He's going to kill you, okay? He's a badass. No, he's not. He's a very nice person. Anyway, these guys are getting ready to put one in the box. This lady used to be a man. Okay, next slide. I tell you the truth, okay? That's the truth. Okay, we're back to him. He also doubles over here on this machine that makes foam parts, you know, to pack the game with so they don't come apart in transit, cushioning. And one more. And that is Lewis. Lewis does a lot of stuff, but mostly he hauls games from where they're built after they're boxed and puts them in a trailer for a truck to, you know, drive away with. And the next one. These people, you can't see them. This is a very bad picture. My wife is on the left. I took it, so I'm not in the picture. But actually, it's my wife, Diana, and some friends from Texas, the Texas Pinball Festival. The guy in the back is Ed Vanderveen. Yes, he's a Dutchman, but he doesn't speak Dutch. He's actually American. Anyway, this was on a cruise. Next one, please. This is Pedro. Pedro is the foreman. If I want anything, okay, we always bump fists, and he'll give me anything I want. If I say, hey, I need a hand protector for this, I know where it is. And sometimes he'll tell somebody else to get it for me, or he'll go get it himself. One more, sir. This is Lucy. Lucy. I have some Lucy translites. In fact, I have a bunch of translites. And also, for your stuff to be signed, I don't know what time it is, but I'm going to be there. You can bring your things, and I'll sign them for you. I also have translites for sale and some AC/DC bells. I think I have one AC/DC train left. Next slide, sir. This is Barty, B-H-A-R-T-I. She is the head of quality control. She is a bitch. Not really. No, she's nice, but what she is, she finds everything and makes a written report of many times a day. So if you're in the quality circle, which I am, I receive messages from her telling me everything that they have going wrong with the game. And it's great because if we have one consistent thing happening, you know, in one place or another, then what we do is we go and focus on that area and we say, hey, what's going on here? 26 of these units are broken the same way. So it's usually somebody who's new and doesn't know what they're doing. And so we try to catch them as soon as we can. Next slide, please. More Lucy's. So this is where they, just after where they put on the stickers. I don't know how many of you have been to the Stern factory, but those are, the artwork is like high res and it's printed on vinyl. It's a, it's an interesting process. First thing they do is spray the cabinet and then they can still move around the sticker. Then they squeegee it when they have it in a perfect spot and it's on there. Next one, please. Yeah, more Lucy's. One's upside down. There's something good about that picture. If you're a man, if you're a woman, I don't know if you care. One more, please. Okay, these are high-speed play fields. They've been screened, and they're sitting waiting to be... They've probably been marked already, the little punch marks, and they're waiting to be assembled. I'm not sure why I have this picture. It's kind of boring. That's why we need the next slide. These are assemblers on the line, and right across, like the line runs long ways, there's a lady here who's putting on the first parts on a play field. Right on the other side of the wall is a person who sits there making the sub-assemblies for her to put on. So they can scream and yell to each other. It's just talk. You don't have to scream. You only have to scream to me because I can't hear. I could never work there. All right, so parts come across, they go on the game, and the series of lines, and they have many of these stations. How many people have been to the Stern factory? Wow, that's a pretty good number. You want to go back? One more, please. A close-up of the Lucy playfields. I like them. I have a few just to keep them. I want them. Next, please. And more. These are guys, actually, the very first boards come out of the racks way in the back. These, you see the boards stacked up like that? That's a, it's like a cart with wheels, and playfields come in that way from our silkscreen house. And the first station is back there, way in the back, that gray thing. I should have taken a closer picture. But it's the prick punch machine, which comes down and makes lots of little marks on both sides of the playfield. So there's no question where things go. You drive a screw in and wake up. Some people went to sleep, which means my speech is already too long. Goodbye. Have a good day. Now. Can we have the next slide? Okay, this is a sub-assembly, and I'm trying to think of what game this is. Yeah. It's AC/DC. It's AC/DC. Okay, anyway, it's moving pretty far along the line, and we have assemblies. One operator probably does four or five different things. There isn't just a one operation place. Each place does four or five different operations when they're assembling play fields. And one more. This is a completed AC/DC in the test rack, and it's turned on its side. They test everything, switches, lights, solenoids. You knew this. One more. I like this back glass. It's cool. Some people, though, some men can't have it because their wives won't let them in the United States. They're not allowed. We have kids. Yeah, it's probably not good for kids, but I don't know. It's not so bad. I like how Northern European people think, okay, about that sort of stuff. It's crazy in the United States, you know. You can't say any bad words, ever. They go, beep. And one more. Okay, this is the LE that's in my office. I still have it there. We're still writing code, and this is what I want to tell you about Star Trek. The code is broken. It's actually not cool, but I have no choice right now except for to wait until the programmers come off other projects so that we can continue. It's funny because don't post this, okay? Thank you. All right. One programmer kind of breaks things. The other one fixes it. Right now the code is broken, but it can be fixed. We're also going to do a lot of work on the first missions. We're going to make them more valuable, more interesting, and probably change the timer situation. Next, please. This is the first Lightwood of... Is it possible for you to rotate that picture? Love it. Okay, this is the first Lightwood for Star Trek, and if you notice, there's a bunch of little inserts between the big hexagons. Anyway, we didn't go with them. It turned out to be so many lights, and we didn't really have a need for them. It looks pretty, though. Next one, please. Oh, good. Yeah, it's a close-up. Same thing. This is Stephen Martin. Stephen Martin is like art production assistant. He's a very talented guy. He's also new to the pinball business. I make fun of him. I make every day miserable for him, okay? No, I don't. He's a good friend. Can we have the next one? This is Greg Ferris, a good friend of mine for, I don't know, 30 years or something. A great artist. I like working with Greg. It's like, I don't know, he's not just an artist. He comes up with cool rule ideas and just about everything. I mean, you know, how come when I hold this, it does that? He is a pinball guy, to the center of his bones. Another one to Greg. It's ridiculous. We want to see a new picture. Oh, that's big, juicy melons. Interesting. We're going to be building that. I'm not sure when. Next. And this is John Trudeau, a good friend. Been friends a long time. He's a character. We get along good. And next. John Borg, also a good friend. We all pretty much get along in engineering. And also, everyone knows what we have to do to make sure pinball continues. And we don't have any bombs that don't work. it's too small anyway. Maybe 40 people in engineering. Every one of them are very good at what they do. And this is a new employee. He, actually, I worked with him for many years at Stern. I'm sorry, Williams. Now he's at Stern. His name is Jim Shirt. And he's part of the electrical design group. But he's also a very good pinball player. And he actually buys one of almost every game we make and puts them in arcades. And what I like about Jim is that he tells me what's going on, how it's earning, where the problems are, all that. You have to have that feedback, and we don't have very many test locations. So Jim provides us with that, mostly me. This guy's fired. He's not even there. I never knew his name. Really, he's gone. I don't know his name. I don't remember. And one more. This is Dave Cadeau. He's been a technician in arcades for a very long time, maybe 25 years, 20 years, something like that. He's very good. He builds up white woods. Actually, I build them up with him. If I have to do my game, I don't mind getting in there and drilling holes and putting the parts on because I learn a lot while I do it. And also, I don't know, choosing the right things or making changes when I work with him. He can keep working and I can go get my laptop and type in everything that I, you know, make a nice list of what has to change. This is Rob Blakeman. He's like, when you go and talk with him, he has the reputation of start with no. Okay? You want something? It's no first. No. No. But actually, he's a very good engineer, and he's like, he's the most organized guy that we have in the mechanical engineering department. And there are many things that he takes care of, like the bill of materials, exact you know, counts of whatever we use in the game. He also does things like, you know, standard parts, but he's very capable of making mechanisms. He did the scoop that turns on Star Trek, at device, and many other things for us. Can we have the next one? These are, the left one, the lady on the left is called Reina. She's an excellent engineer. She's like AutoCAD, harnesses, electronic design. She's great. And the other one is Gabby, and she is she's bill of materials lady. If you want to know how much things cost, and I do, I always want to know because they're always on my case for how much we're spending. So I have to go and ask her for prices of parts, but I always learn something there that's like maybe a more efficient way to make things. What is it? Sometimes you get assemblies, and if I use one kind of post, it's much less money. And then I can have things like the vengeance, okay? I like to spread the parts around, but I want to make sure that for the major features in a game, I have enough money to cover that. Can we have the next one? This is a character. This is Mike Redoble. He's a mechanical engineer, and he did the vengeance ship. If you have to work on it, he's the man to hate and blame. It's pretty tough to get to, but it really wasn't his fault. He's the one who has no voice. I'm the one with no ears. I don't know this man's name, but he's a tester. And right here, he's testing Mustang. And I think he's allergic to me. Another slide, please. Another tester. Could we have the next one, please? This guy's name is Sean, and he's great. When he first came to the company, he came with his mother. Okay, that's a good sign. You show up with your mother, I'm going to pay attention. Okay. He was new to we got to go back one. Yeah, this is this guy caught on in about 2 months and can do almost anything in the factory. It's amazing. So he is he's a welcome member of the Stern. What is it? Better Game Society. One moment. Yeah. Can we have the next slide, sir? This is Lyman Sheets. I don't know if you know him. He is an excellent programmer. I think he's the best one left in pinball. Keith Johnson is up there, too. I have to say, if I'm going to say Lyman, I have to say Keith in the same sentence. But Lyman's made a lot of great games. I really love working with him. He's a crazy man, but so am I. He is intense, and that's intensity right there. And we are working together on our next game sometime in 2015. That will remain undisclosed. Thank you. This is Weisen Chang. He's a relatively new programmer. He did X-Men, but a lot of other people helped too. He programmed X-Men. It was a John Borg game. And can we have the next one? This is Mike Kizabat. I really like him. Every Klingon voice you hear, that's him. And when you play Star Trek, excuse me, I talk too much. Anyway, Mike Kizabat is the kind of work that he does is kind of the tedious code, some of the stuff that other people don't want to do, like making sure a certain image comes up when it's supposed to in the dots, things like that. But, you know, I respect him for making a personal contribution to Star Trek. And it's different than doing your job. You know, it's different from just being there or, you know, carrying on. Most people are very passionate that work at Stern. And so that's not a problem. But, you know, to give your voice and go and work on it, go to a studio, deal with repeating things over and over again until you get it just right, he's great for that. This is Mark Galvez, and he does our dots. Not always. There are five other people that work for him that produce dots. And I very much respect him. A few things that we have in common are we love movies. We, you know, a guy in my position has to know about all the movies that are happening, TV shows. I watched all the series. I love Walking Dead and even Downton Abbey. We have the next one. This is Lonnie Ropp. He programmed Star Trek and along with other coders. Let's see. Jack Benson. Mike Kizabat did some work. Weisen Chang also helped with the programming. Can we have the next one? And we're back to the beginning, so we can turn off the slide projector. That's nice. No more home movies. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a story, and it's a true story. It's weird. One of the weirdest things that ever happened to me. Wow. Okay, we finished Black Knight 2000, and at that time, pinballs were selling very well in Europe, and we did a big show in Paris in a huge cafe. I mean, it's more like a theater, but no slope. Lots and lots of tables inside, outside, a big place right on the Champs-Élysées. And I'm allergic to the air here, I think. I don't know. Anyway. Hey, oh, thank you. Thanks a lot. Good Dutch water. Excellent Dutch water. It has a slight beer flavor. Okay, so Marty Glazeman, Vice President of Marketing, myself, and I think that was it. That's all that was. And we had, I guess, seven Black Knight 2000 set up. They were all covered up, like in kiosks of three or four games around the room, and it was more like 15. So they were all covered up, and they had all these people come, and it's like, people dress up, really make everybody look great, you know. We had to wear, you know, suits and stuff, so we're sitting there waiting for the show to begin, and the MC, the guy who's in charge of the French distributorship, let's call him Pierre, okay? Pierre is, well, I'll put it this way. He borrows his first officer's wife to sit by him at the table. It's, you know, strange, but okay. curtain opens. And
iemand
Pierre
heeft de Monster Bash gespeeld en 57 komma.
Who is that? Ad Yonkers? How dare you interrupt my speech? Were you there? Were you there, Ad? Okay. So we're all sitting there. They come by with champagne and hors d'oeuvres and everything. We were eating, having a great time. The curtain opens, and here is Pierre, and he announces this, you know, Chevalier Noir. Okay, so this guy, dressed up like a knight in armor, comes riding out on the stage on a big black horse, a huge horse, a war horse, big. And the guy, you know, people are shocked, they're applauding and everything, and the horse rears up and everything. Then he comes back down, and you see his eyes get big, and he lets go of everything. We are talking A hole is this big, okay, spraying on people in the room. He does a giant pile back here, okay, huge, and not firm. That's a way to put it. Okay, so behind us, the doors are opening. They're already open, and the air comes through, and everybody smells it, and they go running outside, okay? Including us. I mean, it was like the worst demo I have ever been to or attended. And anyway, Pierre, he abandons his first officer's wife and goes to his boyfriend, and they're both crying, okay? Oh, I don't know what to do, everyone. This is terrible. You know, and the other person, you know, patted him on the back and said, you have to make the best of it. And some people came out with disinfectant and a shovel, okay, and a, you know, broom, a mop, cleaned everything up. Everyone is outside. And at first, everybody was all mopey. Oh, this is disgusting. And pretty soon, people started to laugh about it because it was funny. All right, so after the wind blew in, you know, and it cleared away the smell, and we went on with the unveiling, and it turned out fine. I have other stories, but I don't know if I want to tell them. What do you say?
I haven't seen you in 20 years.
Okay. Hi, how are you?
Hi. Good to see you.
This is Lori Jane Green.
I have to tell you guys that 20 years ago, I had my first job out of university, and I met this guy in the hallway, and he scared the shit out of me. Can you hear me?
What's that?
You scared me so much, because you were, like, so full of energy. But can I ask you one small question? How did you lose your finger?
Say it again.
This one.
Oh, well, the finger. Yeah.
You told the story?
No, I didn't tell him about that. Okay. I think I was like 42 years old, but I was in my second childhood. I'm on my 15th now, and I did this like I guess it was before No Fear, 92. Yeah. So. I like to ride off-road motorcycles, okay, dirt bikes. In California, there are huge mountains, lots of trails. I'm addicted to this. It's insane. And out of thousands of rides, I've had maybe 10 bad days, but a piece of this finger came off when it went in a sprocket. I was chasing these guys. One guy owned the property, and the other guy was the enduro champion of Illinois. And they just left me behind, okay? They were much younger. I think I was 42. So I went up this bump, and they were bumping their back wheel into it and landing like this. So I didn't know how to do that. Besides that, I'm riding a 300-pound four-stroke called an XR600. So I go up there and just go straight down, and I don't even know what happened. But when I get up, here's what happens, okay? When your finger gets cut off, you go like this. Oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck! That's what you do. You can't help it, you know? Okay, so... wow, I was stuck there all by myself, and I had to ride like through 5 miles of hell to get back. And I went to, you know, put my glove back on, and there's the finger in there. It was nasty. So I had a fanny pack on, I put it in the back, and I rode without a glove. And I went back, and of course, when I get into camp, everybody goes, oh, they're freaking out, and they throw me in the car, and we go to the emergency hospital. It was on Mother's Day of 1992. I traded my wife. I go, can we celebrate on Saturday so I can go riding with my friends on Sunday? What do you think? I wish I would not have traded. It was a bad move. Anyway, there are other stories. But you know what? I would like to take some questions if you have them. Where's Andrew? Cool.
First of all, in the middle of your speech here, did we catch a little secret? Is your next pinball machine going to be Downton Abbey?
No, it's My Little Pony.
I've noticed one thing. Steve's ears get even worse whenever you ask what his next game is.
I don't do cute themes. I just can't. That's how it is. So, how many people have questions? No one.
What is the worst game ever designed, but why?
Wow. What is the worst game? You guys are negative, man. It's probably... I would say Airborne Avenger. I was a punk. I knew nothing. I was just, you know, trying to do... Actually, what I discovered was... I shouldn't start there. I should start with... Atari started with extreme wide bodies. It's difficult to make a wide body play nice. All the games that we had done up to that point had scissor flippers, and they had this huge spans between the slingshots, so it would go thump, thump, thump back and forth, if it would even make it, okay? So what I did on Airborne Adventure is I closed it up to be, the flippers were, and slingshots and lanes were pretty much in the place where they are, you know, on already a 20 and a quarter inch wide regular play field, a traditional 20 and a quarter inch play field. So, you know, I don't know, there's a shot you really can't shoot at. I'm not saying that the owner of an Airborne Adventure, actually, I hope it makes him happy. These, you know, everyone that has one, but...
There's one here as well.
Yeah, I know, I've looked at it. So I guess that's it.
How do you test play fields without Steve Kordick?
Oh, well, God, I don't know if you know this, but Steve Kordick and I did not get along well. Okay, when I made Flash, and I was like, I was in awe of Steve Kordick. I knew what he was, who he was, you know, everything about him. And, you know, he was a famous game designer. I don't know how many I had made that point up to that point, but not that many. So I showed him my Flash drawing one night, and I was very proud of it. And it's pretty much like the way the game turned out. And he came to my room once, and, you know, how do you like it? What do you think? And he sits down in my stool, and he says nothing. He says nothing for a minute. Okay, after a whole minute of saying nothing, it's like, what is this? Okay, then a second minute goes by. This is a long time, and I'm thinking, I think he's a dick. How could a guy do this to me, you know? And after about 2.5 to 3 minutes, he said, I think you're going to have nothing but trouble with this thing. And when he said that to me, it's like, I looked at the game. I started the game for 2 hours after he went home, and I just couldn't find anything, you know, that was so disastrously wrong. And I didn't really, what is it? I went home and I cried. That is what happened.
And then he sold 20,000 copies.
Yeah, and the next morning, you know, I didn't even sleep well that night. And the next morning, I looked at my drawing, and finally I said to myself, there's nothing wrong with this. I don't know what his story is, but there's nothing wrong with it. He's a dick. but he's also, you know, he also later on helped me a lot.
Steve, what is your favorite pinball which you have not designed yourself?
I have favorites from every designer. From Dennis Nordman, Whitewater. From Barry Osler, Comet. From my brother, Indiana Jones. My brother is Mark Ritchie. I'm trying to think. From Jim Patla, Mata Hari. You know, there isn't much to the game, but I love how beautiful it is. You know, and there's that anti-Semitic artwork from Dave. Anyway, from Greg Kamik, Captain Fantastic. Steve Kordick, Space Mission, no question. Wayne Nyans, that was a little before my time. I was not a fan, really, of wood rails and that sort of stuff. He made some solid-state games, I think, but I don't remember them. Norm Clark, actually, he's the guy that kind of put together 8-Ball, so I was impressed with that. Someone else put their name on it, but it was Norm who did it. Yeah, name some more game designers. John Trudeau, Hollywood Heat. That's my favorite game he ever made. Who?
George Gomez?
George Gomez is definitely Lord of the Rings.
Pat Lawler,
Addams Family.
Steve Papaduk? Or John?
John Papaduk. Yeah, definitely Theater of Magic.
Brian Eddy?
I'm really partial to Attack from Mars. I like that better than Medieval Madness because I could actually hear them. I can't hear the funny stuff in speech on Medieval Madness. It's a very nice play field, and we're building them, but it's very slow. It's taking a while.
Can I tell a small story about Medieval Madness just really quickly? At Boom Chicago, we had an actress, and we had an actress at Boom Chicago, and she was there for a year. And after a long time, I talked to her, and we talked about pinball. And she said, oh, I was in a pinball machine. I'm like, what? You were in a pinball machine? Yeah, I was like a damsel. Like, you were a damsel in Medieval Madness? Yeah, I was the valley girl. And
And one other names. I'm like, we know each other for a year, and you are a voice on Medieval Madness? I couldn't believe it.
That's cool.
I've done some speech in games. Play better.
More questions?
This one's hard for me because I hardly remember how to do it. Fatality. That's weird.
You said you own 9 machines.
You own 9
machines.
No, I don't own any right now. My games are gone. I sold them when I moved back to... See, it's like this. I play pinball every day as much as I want. Everywhere I go in Chicago, people say, oh, you want to play? Play for free. So I can play all the games that I want to. I'm 64 years old, and I will have a Star Trek LE. I want that game, and I want the code to be better first.
What do you like better, the next generation or the new Star Trek?
I like the new one. It's way faster. It's like, I don't know. It's like, it's furious. It's a battle all the way.
Fantastic. Now, here's what do people like here, the next generation or the new one?
It's always 50-50.
New one, mostly new one.
You lie. No, I don't know that.
Why should people visit Chicago?
I don't know. They're crazy. The weather's almost always bad. It's too hot and humid in the summer, and it's very cold and freezing with tons of snow on the roads. I don't know why you want to. Okay. I'm only there because we don't make pinball in California. That's it.
What's the difference between working at Stern or working at Williams?
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. What is the difference between a chicken? One of its legs is both the same. Don't think about that too long, though. Okay, the difference between Williams and Stern is there isn't much because almost all the key people were at Williams at one time or another. I mean, it's... John Borg never worked for Williams, but, you know, he worked at Gottlieb for a long time and Data East. And, we've been friends a long time. The difference is, what is the difference? I guess it's like Williams was huge and maybe the best collection of people ever in the game business. No question. Yes.
What's your favorite multi-ball?
My favorite multi-ball?
Yes.
Boar. Not 13 ever. So many balls, I can't even hold them on the flipper. My favorite multi-ball, I don't know. You know, it's like a top one, and, you know, I can still play this game now, and I really enjoy it as Firepower. You know, it just was, it's, you know, you can't get multi-ball every game. I can't. And it was fun. It was fun making it, and it was also fun. You know, it's still fun for me to play it. I had one in my office for a long, long time.
Yes. The lane extenders on Next Generation,
yeah.
Are they cheating? Or is it?
No, they're not cheating. Go ahead and do it. I mean, I've written about this before. If a game doesn't make you happy, you can modify it. I'm not offended. I just think you're a cheater. I'm just kidding. It's not true. People should make their games fun to play for them. Nothing wrong with it.
Before high speed, pinball was in a sad state.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of... Do you feel the pressure... to make something different, to move it forward?
Absolutely. When I came to Williams, well, I guess it was like 84 to come back, or 83, no, 84. And the factory was dark, okay? They were making, I don't remember exactly, but it was a long time before, you know, Space Shuttle got on the line. They were building it, they were working on it. At that point, the lights were back on, and they were building them pretty slowly. I think we sold, I don't know, 7,000 or something like that. What do you think? Yeah. Anyway, yes, there was pressure. We wanted to make a great game. I was influenced. I came back from California. California, Chicago, California, Chicago. I come back there. And I like to drive fast. I'm sorry. Not so much anymore, because it's nuts. And where I live, it was easier to go fast in California, and also a lot more fun. You know, twisting roads, I go like this. Like riding in the Alps, okay, or driving in the Alps. And, I got a lot of tickets. I went fast. But anyway, I got caught, and I was just influenced by the speed thing and wanted to make a car driving game with the cops chasing you. I'm used to that.
Did you run red lights?
Actually, I didn't run red lights. That's dangerous. It's safer to go 146 miles on like a road that's like a motorbahn. You know, there's if you have nothing around you to hit, you know, in a good car, it's much safer to do it on a freeway or the autobahn. I don't mess around and never did in, you know, residential areas or schools. I don't want to kill anybody. I never did.
Question about licensing. Are you limited by the movie companies that you work with?
Sometimes. Wow. Some licenses that have gone terrible in the beginning. Star Trek The Next Generation. We sat down with them at Paramount Studios. Roger Sharp. Greg Ferraris. Dwight Sullivan. And I went down there and we met with these ladies who were in charge of marketing, and there were three of them. And so I told them about what we'd like to do with the game, and she said, "You can't have any violence." "What do you mean, no violence?" You know, it's like, I know the prime directive, okay? I've known it since I was 16, laying on the floor, watching the first series, okay, in our family room. So, you know, I tried to talk to them. I mean, what about, you know, if somebody provokes, you know, the captain, or, you know, the Enterprise is threatened, you know, the captain responds every time. And she says, "Well, you can't." And I said, "Well, I can't make a namby-pamby game. I just won't do it. It's not authentic." And so we left. We went back to Chicago, and Roger Sharp, who is a good man with words, also a much better negotiator. I'm a little hot-headed now and then. Angry! Anyway, he called them up and said, "Is there some way we can salvage this?" Anyway, it turns out that the three ladies who were in charge of marketing weren't anymore, and we met this lady named Susie Domnick, and she was great. She was great. She gave us everything we wanted, including something that's never going to happen again, probably. You're never going to get the whole cast, okay, of any show, of any movie again, because the guys in the latest Star Trek movie, they were paid like $1 million apiece to appear in a video game. It was a total failure because of Bozo. What's the name of the guy that produced the movie? Director, producer. I'm asking you. I need help. Or Star Trek. Anybody remember?
J.J. Abrams.
Right. Idiot. Totally. Self-centered. He ruined the video game, and people are still writing messages. Why do you... You know, I mean, he just, like, got all involved in it. A person who knows how to make a movie does not know how to make a video game. I mean, it would be a miracle. Nobody's, you know, and people that make video games don't make movies. It's an art like anything else. And if you push hard enough, you can ruin things. Next.
There was a gap in when you were at Williams. What year? When was this?
81.
From 1981 to 1985, a gap of 4 years. What did you do in that gap?
From 81 to 85?
Yes.
Let's see. I went and formed a company called King Video Design, and we designed a video game that was a first-person playing game, and it was the first game done on a 68,000 or 64,000. It was a new, you know, huge bit microprocessor, and when we finished, the bottom of the video market fell out. Nobody wanted video games. Williams lost $17 million during that time, and almost every other video game company went through, you know, serious problems. A lot of video games closed. At that point, you know, there were, what, maybe 50 Japanese companies that were making video games, and maybe 50 American companies. They were being made everywhere. They saturated the market, and nobody wanted to play video games anymore. So I was doing that, and I think I made Hyper Ball during that time, which is a video game. It's like playing Space Invaders.
tell the rapid fire story when you took over Battle.
Well, we came to the show, one show in like November. This is a trade show where companies show up with their new products. And we showed up with Hyper Ball, and I had a standby. It was so bad and so unreliable that I had a standby the back box, and underneath the back box were some little switches to turn off and reverse the motor to bring the balls back up to the guns. Okay, it was terrible. So we went back and redesigned the whole system. That system was pretty terrible, too. But it did work. Anyway, at the second show we brought it to, Bally brought theirs. And later on I found out from Jim Patla, well, first I should say, Williams bought Bally. You know, I don't know what year, but later on I found out that Jim Patla, a very good game designer, was ordered to copy it, and it was called Project Xerox. That's what they called it.
Yes.
Your question is too long. We cannot answer it. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
It's about Easter eggs. When did you start to put secret things to discover in pinball machines?
Secret things to discover. I didn't always. Once in a while, I would think of them. Most of the time, the programmers came up with them. Now, Dwight Sullivan was good for that. Eugene didn't do it very much. You ever heard of Eugene Jarvis? We worked together on Firepower and Superman. And F-14 Tomcat, come to think of it. Yeah, secret things, like the thing you can do to make all my games come up in Star Trek The Next Generation, I didn't even know until the game was out. You know, and then Dwight told me what the code is, and there it was. A nice thing to do.
Why do you only produce licensed pinball machines?
Because our company wants us to do it that way. I don't think it's such a great idea all the time, you know. But I will say this. There's a lot of great properties out there, and if I really feel like, if I feel like it would make a good pinball machine, if I'm inspired, if I pick up enough things that I could transfer into the game from that theme, then I'll do it. I don't mind, because I'm going to get a little more exposure in the world. Oh, I know that movie. I know this. I know that. It's a good thing, but not always. I could do it in another original game and wouldn't mind at all, but, what is it? Marketing departments operate on fear. Whatever happened on the last game is probably going to happen on the next one. But no, games are, they have their own merits, and things go up and down. If you have a good game, it will sell well. A not-so-good game, it won't sell so well. When they get the one that doesn't sell so well, it's, people kind of panic, and it's always been true.
Yes. Will they ever redesign the cabinet of a pinball machine?
I don't know. It's like, I'd like to. Not to make it look better, to make more room to build toys on the playfield. That's what I want. Okay, so, but, then I think about how much will it cost to do that. You know, it's, I want to say this, okay? I really like the Big Lebowski. I think the guys that put that together are probably the coolest. No, it's the coolest, entrepreneur group, effort that I've ever seen in pinball. It's very nice, and they nailed it. It's the Big Lebowski. I'm thinking about making the Small Lebowski. That's a joke. I think it's interesting, though, that there's like, and by the way, I don't do anything small. Big, bigger, biggest. That's it. That's what I do. That's what I like to do. Okay, are there any more questions?
Is there a future in the Pinball 2000 system?
No. I mean, here's what's wrong with it, in my opinion. I think it was a great effort by a bunch of guys who were trying to sell pinball machines in a very bad time, okay? When things get really tough, the tough get going and you create things, you try anything, it's worth a shot. But, in my opinion, the games are already expensive, and operators did not want them because there were some hot new video games that made a lot more money, and you could put three video games in the footprint of a pinball machine. So the economics weren't that good for the operator. Pinball 2000 is nice to, some people love playing it. Myself, when I see the image that's projected onto the playfield glass, I don't know what I'm hitting, and that always bothered me. Plus, this is just my opinion, okay? It doesn't mean it's a bad game. The playfield was smaller. I don't like that. It should be 20 1/4 by 40-something, It just bugs me. That bugged me, but I'm not the reason why it didn't work. I mean, it's more expensive by far to do that. And maybe it'll happen again. Maybe somebody else will do it. I'm not interested in doing it because I think it adds more cost and... I don't know. It did okay, It did okay as far as sales went. But the truth is, the general manager at that time, or actually president, was a guy named Neil Nicastro. And once he started WMS games, meaning slot machines, he wanted all the space for pinball to be converted to making slot machines. And that's the real reason why there are no more Williams pinballs.
Hey, I have one question for you. You were talking about fighting with people about rules or about points in a game. And does the designer not have the final say in rules and points and these sorts of things? Who has the final say?
I reserve the right to have the final say, but sometimes it isn't worth ruining a great collaboration. I mean, nobody's perfect. Everybody needs to listen to everyone else. That's how we make a game. If somebody has a good idea on the team, I can't accept ideas from outside, but on the team, if somebody has a good idea and it's going to make the game better, I take it. I'm not insecure. I'm going to make more ideas. That's just how it works. And sometimes I do the wrong thing. It's okay. You have to be able to look at that and say, what could I do better on the next game? Something like that.
What do you think about the Pro and an LE version? Is that a good thing?
Oh, no, that's a great thing. That is a very great thing. David Peterson, our investor, came to me when I came back to Stern, and he said we were going to do I was already talking to Lyman on the phone about doing AC/DC months before I came back. And he was still there, but he said, you know, hey, I'd love it. Let's do it. Anyway, I worked with David Peterson, and he told me two things. He said, make the game you want to make. Okay. He hasn't said that to me since, though. I don't know about that, man. Actually, we did fine with AC/DC. And the other thing that he said, or that we talked about, we kind of invented the limited edition. And, it was going to be a level above, and I wanted to do that with lots of bling and cool stuff. And I'm going to keep trying to get them, but it's what is it? It's a delicate balance between the things you have on the Pro, the things you have on the Premium, and the things that you have on the LE. I need a space. I need a value number. It has to be proportional. AC/DC nailed it. Star Trek didn't. Star Trek didn't because the Pro is probably about as much fun to play as the LE. But they took a few things out of the LE, I'm sorry, Premium, that I would have liked to put in. And, of course, the differentiation between that price went down. So any other questions?
What's the next game?
It's none of your business. Now, actually, I can't talk about my next
game. I misunderstood. What's the next game that you would want to make? Not what you're going to make.
I want to make Downton Abbey or, My Little Pony. I can't talk about the game I'm going to make. But I'll tell you this. For me, we have a deal at Stern, Gary Stern and I, and it's like, it goes like this, because a few times he forced me to make games that I did not want to make. It's not only that I didn't want to build them, I knew that it was not a good theme. It's not a good theme. Sometimes I just know, If you do the pinball business thing for a while, you become very cautious about what you choose and what you don't choose. And World Poker Tour was not something I wanted to do. They beat up on me in the office and said, if you want to continue working here, you have to do that. And so I did it, but I wasn't happy about it. On the new games now, we have an agreement, and it is I have to like the theme. I have to love it. I have to believe that it's going to be successful. That's it.
Steve Ritchie, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Love it.